and welcome to Iris for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. My name is Trevor, and I will be reading you the Sioux City Journal for today. Today, the weather will be pretty warm. We'll look at the Siouxland 5-day forecast. Today, it'll be very warm with clouds and sun, with a high of 91 and winds about 4-8 miles per hour. Tonight, it'll be mainly clear with a low of 65 degrees and winds about 4-8 miles per hour. Monday, it'll be very warm with some sun, high of 93, low of 68. Tuesday, blazing sunshine and hot. Wind 7-14 miles per hour, a high of 99 degrees, a low of 70 degrees. Wednesday, near record temperatures with a high of 101 degrees and a low of 73. Thursday, very warm with sun and clouds, a high of 93 and a low of 68. So now with the forecast, let's go to the front page stories of today's Sioux City Journal. The front page spread is about Regbri 48, that big bike ride across Nebraska. And there's a photo of a man holding up a bicycle in a field of bicycles at a campsite in Lamar's after many of the bikes were delivered for the beginning of the Regbri journey across the state from one part to the other. And the kind of caption at the top, from the Missouri River to the Mississippi. Headline, Regbri 48 rolls out of Lamar's. Subheadline, hot and humid weather may be more of an issue than hills. From Lamar's, Iowa. Temperatures are expected to be punishing during the 48th annual Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, which takes off from Lamar's Sunday. The high temperature Sunday is expected to reach 93 degrees, according to the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls. The temperature in Sac City, the Sunday's overnight stop, will be similar. "I never had humidity like this in my life," said James Hansen, 57, a rider who came from Santa Ana, California, to take part in the ride. "Quote, I didn't even know humidity could get this high, quote, frankly," end quote. Even more dangerous heat is likely to befall riders on Tuesday and Wednesday. High temperatures in the overnight stops of Fort Dodge and Iowa Falls will hit 97 degrees and 99 degrees respectively, with heat index values as high as 106 degrees on Wednesday. Hansen, who said he rides 3,000 to 4,000 miles per year, did Regbri for the first time in 2019. The most recent, last year's Regbri, was canceled due to the pandemic. Impressed by his experience on the ride 2 years ago, he was planning to ride all the way through to the ride's Mississippi River terminus of Clinton, Iowa. Quote, "The people are so nice," Hansen said. Hundreds of riders began pouring into the Plymouth County seat of Lamar Saturday in preparation for their departure Sunday morning. A portion of Central Avenue, the main drag of Lamar's downtown, was barricaded to motor vehicles Saturday. Colorful spray-painted bicycles were tied to the street lamp posts as a decorative element. Regbri is expected to draw 20,000 attendees this year. There were hiccups in determining this year's route, as two host towns on the route, Storm Lake and Marquette, pulled out. Storm Lake leaders have been concerned about accommodations for the riders and about COVID, while Marquette was withdrawn due to road construction. Pedestrians in downtown Lamar's Saturday nosied around the shops and food trucks and the many tents set up in the area, hawking everything from bicycle products and services to t-shirts to snacks to whiskey to laundry detergent. A peddler on a bicycle was selling bracelets made from the spokes of bicycle wheels. Riders of all ages apparently weren't deterred by the heat. Bob and Darla Algo, 82 and 81 years old respectively, said they planned to maintain a speed of 15 or 20 miles an hour while pedaling, which averages out to be about 10 miles an hour when stops are figured in. Darla Algoe, a 31-year Regbri veteran, said she was planning to ride all the way through to Clinton, while Bob is choosing to stop in Anamosa, the stopping point on Thursday night, which is also where they come from. Quote, "Heat is not my downfall. Wind is my downfall. I psychologically crumble in the wind," said Bob Algoe, who has ridden in 36 Regbris. In parentheses, headwinds tend to make bicycling considerably more difficult. Drinking water is naturally of the utmost importance during a 454-mile bicycle ride with triple-digit heat index values. Some riders employ other strategies to avoid heat-related distress, including pickle juice, the vinegary, briny solution normally thrown out after the pickles are gone. Apparently, it's a popular beverage, so to speak, among regbry riders because it can stave off an electrolyte imbalance. An electrolyte imbalance occurs when the body's natural balance of water, sodium, and potassium are thrown out of whack. It can be brought on by excessive sweating. The imbalance can cause painful muscle cramps, often referred to as the Charlie horse, as well as more serious heart rhythm disturbances if it gets out of hand. Quote, some guys drink pickle juice, Hansen said. They drink pickle juice to avoid the cramps. Parenthesis, end quote, eat pickles, drink pickle juice, eat watermelon whenever you can, said Nancy Beard, 61, who came down to Lamar's with husband Jay, 70, from the Twin Cities to participate in the ride. Quote, usually towards the end of the day, I'll take a pickle juice shot to help with cramps, said Randy Gihels, 61, of Cincinnati, Ohio, and a member of the Hills Angels Bicycle Club. I don't know if that helps, but pickle juice is good. Gihels, riding with regbry friend Jeff Sanders, 58, of Sinclair, Wyoming, said he also plans to, quote, drink water, drink beer, drink water, drink beer. Quote, every morning when I do regbry, I will drink a little bit of pickle juice to prevent cramps, said Rick Zortman, 48, of Coralville, Iowa, who is planning to ride the entire route and go running in the towns during stops. Quote, and I've never had a cramp a day that I've drank pickle juice in the morning, and it's one of those things where it's a mysterious drug, a mysterious juice that just somehow works. Zortman, under the guise of Human Etch-a-Sketch, has for several years run special routes in city streets with a GPS monitor, spelling out various things. His specialty is writing the names of children with cancer. A GPS map shows the names of the routes he ran, which have the appearance of something written on an Etch-a-Sketch. He spelled out 1,300 names by running and has written at least one name in all 99 Iowa counties. Viewers can see the route on a special phone app. He was planning to, quote, write various things in the towns visited during the ride. In Lamar's, he spelled the name of Jim Green, a former regbry director who died in 2019. In Alta, Iowa, east of Lamar's, he was planning to write Alta, the name of the town. So that does it for the beginning of regbry today. Let's return back to the front page of today's Sioux City Journal, where we look to the mini editorial at the bottom. And this comes courtesy of David Halas, H-A-L-A-A-S, of Sioux City. And he writes, thank you for the Associated Press article on, quote, what's next for newspapers. Local and regional newspapers are important. I encourage the support of the Western Iowa Journalism Foundation at westerniowajournalismfoundation.com. All right, the next story is about the airport here in Sioux City. Headline, competing offer made for hangar. Sioux City staff recommends original flight school proposal from Sioux City. City staff has asked the Sioux City Council to move forward with the proposed Oracle Aviation Center project and reject an alternative proposal from Sioux Gateway Airport's current fixed-based operator to use an existing building and hangar for a pilot training academy. The council is scheduled to vote on the recommendation at its weekly meeting Monday. In June, the council voted unanimously as part of its consent agenda to invite proposals for the lease of land and the construction of a new hangar facility for the fully accredited aviation program, which Oracle Aviation LLC plans to establish in partnership with Morningside University at the city-owned airport. The Omaha Aviation Company operates a similar training center at Millard Airport in Omaha with a partnership to offer a Bachelor of Science degree through the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Proposed agreements with Oracle include a commitment by the city to invest $7 million for the construction of a new hangar facility. The city was awarded a $1 million grant from the U.S. Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration to assist with the construction of the hangar facility, offices, and other site improvements. The project would also be funded through approximately $6 million in general obligation bonds. According to documents filed with the city, after the council announced its intent to accept Oracle's offer and initiated a 30-day notice period on June 14th, the city received a flight training proposal from Hawthorne Global Aviation Services, the current fixed-base operator at the airport. Quote, we support the city's desire to bring an aviation school to the airport, and our proposal would save taxpayers almost $5 million, Chuck Kegley, president of Hawthorne Global Aviation Services, said in a statement Friday. Quote, we are asking the city council to defer on their agenda item Monday to fund new construction and instead lease our south hangar and building, which could be remodeled as Morningside University deems necessary. It's a win-win-win. A win for the school, a win for the airport, and a win for the taxpayers, end quote. According to the documents, Hawthorne proposes the city, quote, lease back a hangar it currently leases to Hawthorne for a zero net rent, invest approximately $2.1 million to refurbish the existing hangar, and in turn sublease the hangar to Morningside for use as a flight school. Hawthorne would provide fuel to Morningside at its cost and support ground handling operations as needed. Additionally, Hawthorne would establish a grant program for at-risk youth in the community who desire a career in aviation in the form of five $2,500 grants per year. In the statement, Hawthorne said using an existing building and hangar would accelerate the startup time. It proposes converting 3,875 square feet of existing office space into classroom space. An additional 6,400 square feet of hangar space would support up to 20 aircraft. Hawthorne has a second adjacent hangar that would allow the aviation program to grow into the additional space rather than build everything at once. Quote, starting a flight school isn't an easy process. We believe this would help eliminate some of the risk and help accelerate their timeline. Hawthorne will provide aviation fuel at costs to ease their startup expenses, Kegley said in the statement. City staff recommends the council reject Hawthorne's proposal, saying it doesn't meet the requirements of the federal EDA grant. Quote, Hawthorne's proposal is non-responsive to the requirements of the notice in that it does not propose to lease the new hangar, nor does it propose a flight school, staff wrote in documents. It does not provide lease payments or other means to repay the proposed $2.1 million city investment. Hawthorne's proposal also does not meet the requirements of the federal EDA grant, and those funds would not be likely to be available to support the development of a flight school. Under the proposed development and lease agreements with Oracle, the aviation company would commit to leasing the new structure on a triple net basis for an initial 20-year period with two 10-year renewal options. Lease payments would be on a graduated scale, increasing from $15,000 to $33,000 per month over the initial 20-year term. Oracle would lease approximately 100,000 square feet of land for the project for $20,000 per year, complete all interior finishes within the facility, and invest $1 million in furniture, fixtures, and equipment. It would also lease the existing, quote, alert hangar for an initial 7-year term for $1,500 per month and use its best efforts to create 42 new jobs, including instructors in the new flight school. The city, in turn, would construct and own the new $7 million hangar facility, including a minimum of 29,400 square feet of hangar space and 10,000 square feet of office/training space, and provide property tax rebates on a graduated scale to Oracle over the first 15 years of the lease. The city would also complete a variety of improvements and repairs to the apron, roadway, and other miscellaneous exterior concrete areas, utilities, and other site improvements, which are currently estimated at $295,500. So that's kind of the latest news on the potential creation of a flight school at the Sioux Gateway Airport in collaboration with Morningside University. Returning back to the front page of today's Sioux City Journal, we'll look at the last main story here regarding COVID-19, everyone's favorite news topic. Headline, COVID cases in Iowa on rise again, from the Journal Des Moines Bureau. After more than a half year in decline, the number of COVID-19 cases in Iowa has been increasing in recent weeks. With cases increasing despite widespread availability of the COVID-19 vaccine, huge public gatherings like the Quad City Times Bix 7 Road Race, RegBry, and the Iowa State Fair in the coming weeks, and another school year set to start in roughly 2 months, public health officials are expressing concern. And their message echoes in unison. If you have not already, please get the COVID-19 vaccine. Nearly new hospitalizations from COVID-19, more than 97% nationwide, are unvaccinated individuals, according to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The director of that organization, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, recently characterized the state of COVID-19 as a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Quote, we clearly know that the public health trend in COVID-19 cases in Iowa and in Polk County is definitely because of individuals who are not vaccinated, Polk County Public Health Spokeswoman Nola Anger Davis said. Quote, we can't stress enough about getting vaccinated. We know the vaccine is effective. We know it works, end quote. After the deadly winter, the number of new COVID-19 cases in Iowa started falling around late November and early December, roughly the same time the vaccine was first made available. Over the next 7 months, the numbers of COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths all dropped dramatically and continuously. But over the past 3+ weeks, and for the first time since the devastating winter surge, the numbers of new COVID cases and hospitalizations in Iowa have been increasing. The rolling 2-week average of daily new cases bottomed out at 80.7 on June 27th. Since then, that figure has steadily increased and more than doubled to 173.6 on Tuesday, according to state public health data. That is the last date for which state public health data is publicly available because the state has reduced its COVID-19 data reporting. Throughout much of the pandemic, the state updated COVID data multiple times per day on its coronavirus.iowa.gov website. Recently, the state changed to updating the figures just once per week. Also, over the past 2 weeks, COVID hospitalizations have jumped from 71 to more than 100, the most in 2 months. Public health officials hammered on the need to get more Iowans vaccinated in order to stop the virus's spread. Quote, as cases increase across the country and in Iowa, it's important that even more Iowans get vaccinated, said Sarah Elkstrand, a spokeswoman for the state public health department, said in an emailed response to questions. Quote, it's the key to reducing virus activity, saving lives, and keeping our healthcare resources available for all Iowans' needs. Public health officials generally say roughly 70% of a population needs to be vaccinated in order to stop the spread of a virus like COVID-19. According to the most recent White House state report on COVID-19, 60.9% of Iowans 18 years or older are fully vaccinated, and 64.6% have received at least one shot. In parentheses, some versions of the vaccine require 2 shots in order to be fully vaccinated. Quote, we look at about 70% for community immunity, Davis said, adding that roughly 64% of Polk County residents are vaccinated. Quote, so we still have a little ways to go. The emergence of the COVID-19 Delta variant has added to public health officials' consternation. The new variant appears to be even more transmissible than the original virus and appears to be having a greater impact on young people, health and medical officials say. Quote, with the rise in prevalence of the Delta variant, we are urging all Iowans to get vaccinated for COVID-19 as soon as possible, Elkstrand said. Since the beginning of the vaccine campaign, our goal has always been to get as many Iowans vaccinated as quickly as possible. Vaccines continue to be a critical tool for preventing the spread of this virus and keeping all Iowans safe and healthy. We will continue to message about the importance of getting vaccinated for COVID-19 for the foreseeable future. The rise of the Delta variant at a time when cases are increasing and less than 70% of Iowans are vaccinated could create a troublesome mix. And one more potentially dangerous ingredient looms. The VIX, held July 24th, RegBright, which is July 25th, i.e. today, through July 31st, and the State Fair, which is August 12th through August 22nd, are 3 Iowa institutions that will bring together thousands of people from all over. In 2019, there were more than 13,000 runners in the BIC 7, and hundreds of non-runners gathered along the course or at house parties that day. In 2019, 10,000 riders from all 50 states participated in RegBright, a bicycle ride that crosses the state from the Missouri River on the western border to the Mississippi River on the eastern border. And in 2019, nearly 1.2 million people attended the Iowa State Fair. They are all outdoor events, which health officials say carry less risk than those in enclosed spaces, but that doesn't make them risk-free, especially for those who haven't been vaccinated. Immediately after those major events, Iowans will return to the school year for the 2021 through 2022 school year. And unless something unexpectedly changes in the meantime, they will do so without any face mask requirements. The Republican-led Iowa legislator and Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds earlier this year passed a new state law that says school districts and local governments cannot enact pandemic mitigation strategies like face mask requirements that exceed the state's strategies at the time. Children 11 years and younger are still not eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. Anytime we see people coming together who are not vaccinated, we know the situation is ripe for the Delta variant to spread, Davis said. That's especially worrisome as we are getting back to a fall where we will have kids in school. And the best tonic, Davis repeated, is for more Iowans to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The challenge facing public health officials is the reticence of people who are not yet vaccinated. According to a new poll from the Associated Press / NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, 80% of Americans who are not yet vaccinated say they either probably will not or definitely will not get the vaccine. Only 19% of unvaccinated said they will probably or definitely will get the vaccine, the Associated Press reported. Quote, this isn't something to wait on. We know what protects you is getting vaccinated, Davis said. Quote, we know over the course of time that the variant is changing. Right now, the Delta variant is more transmissible. We don't know what the future of this virus looks like. Quote, the most absolutely important way to get protected right now is to get vaccinated, end quote. Now let's turn to the inside page, state section, page A2, and we look at the expanded child tax credit. Headline, expanded child tax credit, a relief for Iowa families. Subheadline, about 669,000 children statewide to benefit from program, could reduce poverty in Iowa. It's been a tough year for Tanya Street. As a self-employed Cedar Rapids resident who teaches ice skating, the 45-year-old was unable to work as the novel coronavirus shut down business throughout most of 2020. And then the derecho hit in August, severely damaging the M on ice arena and further hindering Street's means to earn an income. Each week, she wondered whether she would be able to pay her bills and provide for her 17-year-old daughter, Carly Burgess. Quote, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. Sometimes I just don't know if I'm going to be able to make a payment or not, she said. But Street, along with millions of other families across the nation, have found some relief from new advanced child tax credit payments that went into effect this month. Quote, I'm still dealing with financial ramifications from everything that happened last year. When I heard about the child tax credit, I was relieved because things are very tight, Street said. The $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, passed by Congress in March, includes $100 billion temporary expansion of the child tax credit that will benefit more than 36 million families, representing about 60 million children across the United States. Starting in July, half the annual credit will be distributed in advance on a monthly basis until December. The other half will be available after filing 2022 taxes. Under the new program, families can receive $3,000 per child aged 6 to 17, or about about $250 per month per child. Families receive $3,600 per child under the age of 6, or $300 per month per child. If a child turns 18 in 2021, he or she is not eligible to receive monthly payments. The credit is available to a single parent making up to $75,000 a year, single head of household filers making up to $112,500 a year, and couples filing jointly making up to $150,000 a year. Monthly checks from the Internal Revenue Service began arriving on July 15th. The expanded child tax credit will benefit about 669,000 children in Iowa, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute. That means 93% of children under the age of 18 in the state could benefit from this expansion. Of those children, the majority, 78%, are white, 10% are Latino, 4% are black, 2% are Asian, and 5% identify as other or multiple races, the analysis concluded. The expansion also means an additional 27 million children will receive the tax credit. Families who didn't earn enough money and didn't owe income taxes previously could not receive the full tax credit. In Iowa, 198,000 children who weren't eligible under the previous credit program can now receive these monthly payments, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. This move could be transformative for some families nationwide, particularly some of the poorest Americans. The program is expected to cut child poverty in the United States in half, according to analysis from the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University. Iowa could see nearly a 40% drop in child poverty, the center said. In 2019, about 7% of Iowa families lived below the poverty line, which is currently $26,500 for a family of four. But experts warn this advance tax credit is just that, and does not operate the same way as a stimulus payment. The monthly payments are families' estimated child tax credits for 2021 and are based on 2020 or 2019 income and household size. So if their income or household size changes, families could end up receiving smaller refunds than expected or owe on their taxes next spring. quote, people may have to pay back a portion of their taxes. It could be a problem for people around that $150,000 or $75,000 range, said Noah Schmall, a lawyer at Lynch Dallas Law Firm in Cedar Rapids. Eligible families can opt out of the monthly payments and instead receive them as a lump sum with their 2022 taxes instead. To manage their payments and more information on the child tax credit, Schmall said families should visit the IRS website at irs.gov/credits-deductions/advance child tax credit payments in 2021. Schmall said families can also speak with an accountant or lawyer to determine if this could be a challenge for them. The Biden administration and Democrats in Congress have pushed to make the credit permanent. However, it's unclear whether President Joe Biden's American Families Plan, which bolsters aid for families, women, and children, will be passed by Congress. When Street's first check from the IRS arrived, she planned to fill up her car with gas so she could continue commuting to Coralville to teach ice skating lessons at the ice rink in the Coral Ridge Mall. Her business has picked up in recent weeks as the COVID vaccines have become more widely available. But Street said her income still is falling below her typical rate before the pandemic. Because of that, she expects her child tax credit will go towards bills. But she's hopeful this will help her do more than just scrape by. Maybe she'll be able to take her daughter out to eat for the first time in several months, she said. Quote, although it's not 100% peace of mind, just having that little extra each month going to give me a little more flexibility. And that's huge, Street said. So far, she has been able to get by with the help of food and rental assistance. Stimulus checks went directly to pay for bills, she said. Quote, the last year has been tough, and I've had to deal with the majority of it on my own, Street said. Staying afloat has been a huge stress. I'm just grateful Congress has passed something for us to help us get by. Next state news, kind of we go to Des Moines to look at state-level policymaking. Headline, Iowa GOP leaders question breadth of, quote, infrastructure. Subheadline, Democrats advocate for more expansive definition. From Des Moines, or Vinton. Despite bipartisan agreement that it's time to, quote, plus up spending on the nation's infrastructure, disagreement over just what qualifies and how it's paid for are likely to continue to push back the arrival of Infrastructure Week, Republican members of Iowa's congressional delegation said Friday. Quote, I do think it's time to plus up infrastructure spending, U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said during a visit to Fraser Tree Farm near Vinton. However, she said she wants the spending to be focused on what Americans typically think of as infrastructure, like public works projects. Quote, so when I asked Iowans, they said it's roads, bridges, waterways, broadband, Ernst told reporters. Quote, but when you start throwing extra stuff in there, she said about Democratic proposals for expanding Medicare for seniors and other so-called human infrastructure, like child care and family tax credit. Quote, it makes it that much harder, especially when it comes down to the pay fors. What Republicans don't want to do is raise taxes on those hardworking, middle-income Americans. Like Ernst, First District Representative Ashley Hinson is on the fence when it comes to supporting an infrastructure package. The Marion Republican sees the need for improving roads, bridges, and broadbands, but said she can't support the level of spending President Joe Biden and House Majority Democrats are proposing. The bipartisan infrastructure framework calls for spending nearly $1 trillion over 5 years, including about $579 billion in new spending on roads, broadbands, and other public works projects. However, that's just the first phase of Biden's infrastructure agenda. He wants it to be followed by a much broader $3.5 trillion measure from Democrats. Quote, when we hear all this talk about inflation and then possibly using a reconciliation package as a vehicle to get this through, it's a major red flag, said Hinson. And for other Republicans on the House Appropriations Committee. Democrats plan to bring up spending bills next week, so the appetite for more and more spending is very clear. Senator Chuck Grassley, who joined other Republicans in voting against starting debate on a bipartisan infrastructure bill that senators had not seen, expressed similar concerns earlier in the week. He said he's supportive of an infrastructure package, especially the funding to build out broadband, which Iowans have called for in at least two-thirds of his county meetings this year, he said. However, he said he needs for answers on how it will be paid for. Hinson and Ernst have doubts that Democrats can pay for their plans without raising taxes on middle-income taxpayers. Even if they stick with Biden's proposals to tax corporations only those people with incomes more than $400,000 a year, they see those taxes being passed on to consumers. quote, "It's a nice talking point," Ernst said, "but the fact of the matter is that the costs are going to go up. That will impact everyone, regardless of their income level." All right, let's now turn to page A6 and read the week in Iowa. It's a recap of news across the state from the past 7 days. These are kind of the shorter articles, more blurbs. In the news, Finkenauer launches Senate campaign. Former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer launched her Democratic campaign in Iowa's U.S. Senate race. Nearly 7 months out of office, Finkenauer said she still sees, quote, "a lot to fight for." Continuing a theme from her Iowa legislative and congressional campaigns, Finkenauer's Senate campaign focuses on working families who are oftentimes not heard in Washington. Longtime Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley has not said whether he'll seek an eighth term. Finkenauer is the third Democrat to join the race, with former County Supervisor Dave Mulbauer and Glenn Hurst of Minden. Claims denied. Two childhood friends named by defense lawyers as alternative suspects in the killing of University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts said they had nothing to do with the crime. Lawyers for Christian Behena Rivera, the man convicted of killing Tibbetts, named Gavin Jones and Dalton Hansen. Unsafe ride. A woman whose family went on an Iowa amusement ride shortly before an accident that killed an 11-year-old boy and critically injured his brother said her boat also had problems floating properly and felt unsafe. And that's from the Adventureland Park in Altoona, north of Des Moines. Culver nominated. President Joe Biden nominated former Iowa Governor Chet Culver to the board of a federal organization that works to ensure rural areas have access to credit. If confirmed by the Senate, it would be Culver's second term serving on the board. In the news, diversity plan ban making impact. A new state law that bars schools from denying students from enrolling in other public districts in order to maintain demographic diversity is already having a significant impact on some Iowa districts with large minority populations. Almost 140 students, almost double what the state's legislative and analysis agency projected, have requested to open enroll out of the Waterloo Community School District's, school officials said. In Davenport, more than 100 students have applied for open enrollment, all but 9 under the new law, school officials said. Crash victims. The two victims of a plane crash in Muscatine County were identified as Daniel and Sharon Slack of El Dorado Springs, Missouri. They were the only two aboard a 1972 Piper PA-28-150 that crashed just north of Muscatine. Daniel Slack was 68 and Sharon Slack was 69. Foreclosure worries. As the federal moratorium on housing foreclosures nears its end, lenders and financial counselors do not foresee a tsunami of foreclosures in Iowa. In fact, some say their worst fears about the coronavirus pandemic's impact on mortgage delinquencies and potential foreclosures have not been realized. 26 tornadoes. Preliminary data shows 26 tornadoes tore across Iowa on July 16th, according to the National Weather Service. If that number holds true, it would be the third most tornadoes in a single day to hit the state since 1980. More odds and ends stories. Infrastructure spending. Members of Iowa's congressional delegation are optimistic upgrades to Mississippi River locks and dams will be included in a proposed $1.2 trillion infrastructure funding package. Anniversary displays. To commemorate Iowa's 175th anniversary, the State Historical Society is creating 300 temporary pop-up displays and 15 permanent cast aluminum historical markers. Both are available by online application. Explosion cause. A January home explosion in southeast Iowa that killed one person and injured another was caused when vapor from a gas leak was ignited when someone in the home lit a cigarette, officials reported. Fundraiser headliners. National GOP chairwoman Ronna McDaniel and 2016 Iowa caucuses winner Texas U.S. Senator Ted Cruz will appear at Iowa 1st District U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson's Barbecue Bash fundraiser August 28th in Central City. Slater Field. The University of Iowa plans to name the field at Kinnick Stadium for Duke Slater, a trailblazing black player who was an All-American tackle a century ago, the Associated Press reported. Water plan. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources is accepting public comments to be included in the upcoming Cedar River Water Trail Plan. All right, now let's turn to the opinion section of today's paper, page A10. We'll do the editorial, and then we'll do the letters to the editor. The editorial from the Journal Editorial Board. Headline, competition for local seats fuels robust debate. Want a bigger say in the direction of your city or school district? If that's the case, now's your chance. Next month, Iowans can start filing nomination papers for hundreds of open seats for mayor, city council, and school board. Serving as an elected official, as elected local government officials, often a time-consuming and thankless job, for little or no pay or benefits. In Iowa, for example, school board members are all unpaid. Nevertheless, they're all important positions, with wide sway over vital issues like educating children, maintaining roads, and keeping citizens safe. Unfortunately, in many communities, too few citizens step forward to seek the post. In the past, there have been municipal elections in some small northwest Iowa towns where zero candidates filed for mayor or city council. That's led to local residents taking office after receiving just a handful of write-in votes. That's less than ideal. We'd rather see robust competitions for local government posts in many communities as possible. Spirited contests where candidates can debate important issues and give voters a clear understanding of how they would lead their city or school district. In Sioux City, three of the four council seats are up for election this year. They're currently held by Dan Moore, Pete Grokin, and Alex Waters. From August 9th through August 26th, candidates can file nomination papers for council. In Sioux City, if seven or more candidates file more than twice the number of open seats, a primary election will be held on October 5th, with the top six vote-getters advancing to the November 2nd general election. We'd like to see more than enough candidates step forward to trigger a primary. That would hopefully lead to an even more robust debate and ensure that no one, not even the incumbents if they decided to seek another term, would receive a free pass to the general election. The first day to file nomination papers for school board in Iowa is August 23rd. It runs through September 16th. State law does not give local school districts the option of a primary election like it does for municipal governments. Three of the seven seats on the Sioux City Community School Board will be on the November 2nd ballot. They currently are held by Peria Alcoron Flori, the current board president, Ron Colling, and Jeremy Saint. As with city council races, we believe the more candidates that file for the school board, the better it is for voters. If you're on the fence about running for council or school board, remember barriers to getting on the ballot are low. It only takes about 100 signatures from voters for the Sioux City Council, for example. Take a chance and put your name forward. Win or lose, you'll have a chance to advance your views on how best to lead the city or school district in the future. Now, let's turn to the letters to the editor from Siouxland Voices. The first one is titled, Woodbury Supervisors Commended for Wind Ordinance. On behalf of the Iowa Conservative Energy Forum, I am writing to commend the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors on their Common Sense Wind Ordinance that recently was approved and adopted. This ordinance balances the rights of individual property owners to make a decision on what's best for their own land and families, while also maintaining guardrails to ensure projects are built within certain specifications for the community. This ordinance can serve as the best practice for other counties considering ordinances because it protects the rights of community members while also ensuring the county stays open for business and economic opportunity. Wind energy is a drought-proof crop and a critical source of revenue for Iowa farmers, paying $69 million annually in land lease payments across the state. While the ordinance sets some parameters, the county still has the opportunity to further discuss specific projects through building permits and applications, which ensures that each project receives individual attention. These checks and balances are the foundation of good public policy. We look forward to watching the success in Woodbury County. Signed, Nick Boyink of Bondurant, Iowa. Headline, New Laws and Obstacle Course for Iowa Voters. And they write, Republicans are stealing Iowa's right to vote through petty restrictions. Have you ever seen the show The Floor is Lava? My grandchildren love it. It's an obstacle course where if you fall, you drop into a swirling pool of red liquid, i.e., quote, lava. Unfortunately, voting in Iowa has also become an obstacle course. Only if you can make it through a maze of restrictions do you get to vote. For example, in Iowa, number one, disabled people can have their ballot delivered by somebody only if they have filled out a specific form. Two, the places you can vote and the times that the polls will be open has been greatly limited. Three, absentee votes must be received before the polls close, parentheses, never mind delayed mail. Four, if you have not voted in the last general election or have moved, etc., you will be struck from voter rolls. 5, and my favorite, some voters who registered age 17 were inactivated because they didn't vote in an election that they were too young to vote in. In parentheses, this was changed, but the people who were inactivated were never reactivated. Active Iowa voters, in parentheses, those currently able to vote, dropped by about 13% during a recent round of, quote, voter roll maintenance. These nitpicky rolls were voted in by all the Republicans and none of the Democrats. Don't let them take your right to vote. Support Democrats and restore election fairness to Iowa. Signed, Jane Cranston of North Liberty, Iowa. Now we will turn to the sports section of today's paper for local sports stories of interest. We'll first start with the Iowa High School State Baseball Tournament. Headline, Hawks Senior Step Up. Subheadline, Gales, Waldschmidt Show Leadership at Catcher, at the plate. Xavier Gallus stepped up when he needed to, and the moment didn't come during a game. Yes, it had to do with baseball, but Gale's decision helped the Remsen St. Mary's baseball team stay on track towards the Class 1A state baseball tournament. The Hawks made it back to the state tournament and have the number one seed heading on to an 11 a.m. Monday quarterfinal against Grundy Center at Merchants Park in Carroll. Gales stepped up when the Hawks needed a catcher. Jackson Bunkers went down due to a back injury and it was going to keep him out for the rest of the season. Gallus mainly played in the outfield, but he saw there was a need. Plus, Gallus played in the squat as a 6th and 7th grader, so he thought he'd give it a go. Quote, well, a lot of seniors wouldn't want to reach out like that, especially when they've had success out in the positions they were in, but he wants to win, Remsen St. Mary's coach Dean Harpenow said. He doesn't care about Allstate, whatever, what have you, he wants to win the state title. Once the Hawks found out that Bunkers wasn't able to return, Gallus and Hawks assistant coach Brady Harpenow went right to work relearning the position. Dean Harpenow said that Gallus actually went back to the basics, learning how to catch certain pitches to the footwork when trying to pick a runner off. Gallus knew he had to put the time in. He worked countless hours with Brady Harpenow, and even on Saturday, the two were outside during the hot afternoon going through drills. The drills on Saturday focused on blocking curveballs in the dirt, and the Remsen St. Mary's pitching staff, notably Blaine Harpenow, likes to challenge hitters by throwing breaking balls low in the zone. Quote, every game, he got better, if that makes sense, Dean Harpenow said. Quote, and he's got the right mindset. He's a kid that it's hard to frustrate. The Hawks were willing to be patient with Gallus as he was figuring out how to be a catcher again. Quote, we told them up front, hey, we will live with certain things, and Blaine will live with that too. He's not going to become frustrated, Dean Harpenow said. He understands the situation. The goal is not to win a game. The goal is to get back to the state tournament and put ourselves in the chance to win the thing, to get into the title game. Even opposing teams were surprised how developed Gales was behind the plate. When Remsen St. Mary's played Newell Fonda the first time, Gales picked off two out of his first three runners who attempted to steal a base. Mustangs activities director Brian Wilkins mentioned to Dean Harpenow after the game how impressed he was at Gales. Gales also had to take Bunker's spot in the lineup. Gales usually hit fifth in the lineup when he was healthy, but after Bunkers had to sit out, Gales moved up one more spot in the lineup. His offense hadn't taken a back seat since the defensive change. Gales enters Monday's game with a team-high 33 RBIs, and he's hitting .345 on the season. In 87 at-bats, Gales had struck out just 8 times. Quote, I didn't really know if he had to adjust as he was going to get pitched better, Dean Harpenow said. Maybe seeing more off-speed, but then you also have to give credit to Cale Ortman, who's behind him at .356, who also, if they did walk Xavier, for example, then they're going to have to deal with Cale as well, who has done a nice job for us as well. Ortman has had a nice season to go along with a .356 batting average. Ortman has 30 RBIs and has 8 doubles and a triple. One other hitter who Dean Harpenow has been impressed with down the stretch has been senior Levi Waldschmidt. Last year, Waldschmidt hit .256, but in the offseason, the Hawks senior worked on making his swing more compact. He wanted to make his swing shorter to the baseball, but longer through the strike zone. That usually translates to more hits, and that's the result Waldschmidt has seen in 2021. Waldschmidt leads the Hawks in batting average at .482, and he's tied for the team hits with Blaine Harpenow in hits, i.e. 42.
for us, it feels pretty much the same because we've been down there so many times, Waldschmidt said, of playing at State. Quote, we're kind of used to these big games. We kind of use that to our advantage. We've been in so many games like that that we know what it feels like. Waldschmidt has hit multiple extra base hits, including 4 triples and 2 home runs. Waldschmidt was the hitter who got the Hawks going in the sub-state win over the Mustangs on Tuesday in Cherokee. He got a triple in the first inning, and we got on the scoreboard, Dean Harpenow said. Boy, that's just confidence. When you can score first, you take a little bit all the way, especially when Blaine is on the mound and teams know that, hey, one run could win this game really easily. Of course, pitching is going to be a key this week. Blaine Harpenow has led the Hawks staff by going 12-0 with a .67 ERA. The Kirkwood baseball signee has a 120 strikeouts, and he has walked only 12 men all summer. Harpenow has also logged 63 innings, just 7 more during last year's truncated season. In 2019, Blaine Harpenow pitched 91 and a third innings. All right, let's now turn to Musketeers hockey. B-U-I-U-M, taken by Detroit in second round. From Sioux City, Luke Strand hopes that the 3 Sioux City Musketeers selected Saturday in the NHL draft can bust through the proverbial door. Shai Bayam, Daniel Laschek, and Owen McLaughlin were the 3 former Musketeers who were selected. Bayam was the highest selected of the 3. Detroit took the San Diego native 36 overall, which happened in the second round. The Red Wings made a trade to bump up in the draft and take the former Musketeer. The Red Wings made the trade with Vegas, setting picks 38 and 128 in order to bump up and take Bayam. There were some NHL scouts who came to watch the 6'3", 214-pound defensive man. Evidently, the Red Wings were one of those teams who visited the ranks around the United States Hockey League. Bayam interviewed a couple times with the Red Wings throughout the season, and he liked what he heard. He also made his pitch on why he should be picked by a franchise like Detroit. Quote, I told them that I think I can be a good, solid top defenseman in the NHL, Bayam said during Saturday's press conference with the Detroit media. Quote, I went from San Diego to Chateauk, St. Mary's, and to Sioux City. Then I'll be going to Detroit. I'm so excited to be playing this organization. It's a dream come true getting drafted by the Red Wings. Before Bayam takes the ice for the Red Wings and their minor league affiliates, he'll spend the next season playing at the University of Denver. Now that Bayam has been drafted, Strand said that Bayam can bust the door open for his future. Shai is a big-time player with a huge ceiling, Strand said. A part of that is that he's got time to go to Denver and develop. The fact that Detroit moved up and made a trade for Shai is a positive sign. Penguins pick Latch. The Pittsburgh Penguins took the 6-5 defenseman Daniel Latch in the overall 7th round with the 213th overall pick. Latch scored 19 points for the Musketeers this past season. Before Latch came to Sioux City, he played in the league for the U.S. National Development Team. He scored 7 points during the 2019-2020 season. He was rated in the top 200 by the NHL Central Scouting. Quote, I'm very happy for Daniel, and this is well-deserved, Strand said. He's got skill, and he has poise. He's an impact player at the University. He'll be an impact player at the University of Wisconsin, and I think he's persevered through time. Whether it was in through injury at the NTDP, he reset and refocused on this season. He made a very big impact here, not only as a player, but as a person. McLaughlin was taken by 7 spots ahead of Lash by Philadelphia. McLaughlin won't have to worry about that for a while. McLaughlin will spend the season in Sioux City after playing 3 games for the Musketeers during the 2019 through 2020 campaign. Quote, Owen will be here full-time, Strand said. He'll be an offensive threat. And as to where he's selected by Philadelphia, you'll see a lot of potential. He's got a long body. He's very gifted. He's got a bright future. McLaughlin is in town training with the 40-man roster right now. In fact, the Musketeers will scrimmage with Sioux Falls later Thursday and Friday. There will be 2 games played at the IBP Ice Center at 4 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. on Thursday. All right, let's close out our time together with just Dear Abby before we do our weather recap. Headline, man's lack of engagement concerns family-to-be. Dear Abby, my stepdaughter is engaged to a wonderful young man she has been with for more than 3 years. We welcome him as part of our family and are excited to have him as a son-in-law. However, due to his overwhelming anxiety, as my stepdaughter explains it, he barely says a word whenever we see him. In the several years they have been dating slash engaged, he has joined us for only one family holiday meal, and conversation was painful to say the least. We have invited him to many family gatherings, large and small, but he seems to have an excuse not to attend each one. I very much want to know to get him better and to make him feel welcome, comfortable, and loved as part of our family, but his silence, lack of eye contact, and his apparent desire to avoid us makes it very difficult. Any advice? Signed, Challenge Future Mother-in-Law. Abby writes, Dear Future Mother-in-Law, you are overdue for a serious talk with your stepdaughter. Have you asked her if she knows the reason for her fiancé's lack of social skills? Is he this way of everyone or just you and your husband? Could it be on the autism spectrum or feel intimidated by your attempts to make him feel, quote, comfortable and loved? His extreme introversion may be a red flag because it may have negative repercussions for her if she marries him. Dear Abby, how do I talk to my roommate about the thermostat without coming off as a parent or a control freak? I prefer the thermostat be at 77 to 78 during the warmer months, but every time I step out the door, they turn the AC down to 72 or 73. It makes the house feel like you could hang meat in here. The kicker is, it's 80 degrees outside. I don't think the unit even needs to be on. Not only am I concerned about the electric bill, I'm freezing in my own house with pants on. And this will become a problem because we're expecting temperatures in the 90s for weeks at a time, and the cost of electricity rises with the heat. I'm tired of playing the game of adjusting the temperature and not saying anything. Advice? Signed, Temperatures Rising. Dear Temperatures Rising, stop pussyfooting around and have an adult discussion with your roommate about this. If possible, a compromise should be worked out. Whose name is on the lease? Is it yours or both of yours? Is the cost of heating and cooling the unit shared equally? If a compromise can't be reached upon, it's possible that two of you are incompatible and one of you needs to make other living arrangements. Dear Abby, about a year ago, a friend I've known since high school came out as a transgender female. I'm glad to see her living her life as her authentic self, and I want to do what I can to support her. I'm one of those old-fashioned people who still has photo albums, and there are a fair amount of pictures of her pre-transition. Obviously, the photos are labeled with her, quote, dead name. Should I go back to the albums and change the labels to replace her former name with her new one? Signed, Good Friend in Illinois. Dear friend, trans people have strong feelings about dead naming, and many are against the practice. This is a subject you should discuss with your friend and abide by her preference. All right, well, let's do a quick weather recap, and then we'll sign off our time together for the Sunday Sioux City Journal. Again, today will be very warm with clouds and sun. Winds at 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 91. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 65. Monday, it'll be very warm with some sun, high of 93, low of 68. Tuesday, blazing sunshine and hot, high of 99 and low of 70. Wednesday, it'll be near record temperatures, high of 101 degrees and a low of 73. Thursday, it'll be very warm with sun and clouds, a high of 93, a low of 68. All right, that brings us to the end of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, July 25th. Your reader today has been Trevor, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Until next time, goodbye.